Welcome to the Peyto Exploration and Development Year-End Reserves Podcast, where we discuss the results of our reserve report with Darren G., the President and CEO of Peyto Exploration and Development, J.P. Lachance, our VP of Exploitation, and Rico Espiritu, the Manager of Engineering and Business Development. Darren, we drilled a record number of wells in 2015, despite spending nearly $100 million less capital to do that than in 2014. How do we do so much with so much less? Do we expect to be able to do more with less as we go through 2016?
You know, Jim, we did more with less this year, primarily because we saw lower activity levels in the industry, and that drove lower service costs. So we took advantage of those lower service costs, translated that into more wells drilled with less money. You know, in addition to that, we had some consolidation, I think, of experience onto the last remaining working equipment. And so when you get that consolidation of experience, there's less mistakes made too. And that really does translate into lower costs for us as well. We're faster in terms of getting activity done. We do it with less equipment, and at the end of the day, it costs less. So not only were we seeing lower service rates, but we're also seeing an increase in the amount of experience that's on those rigs and an increase in the execution. And so that all translates into better efficiencies in the field by far, I think. You know, I think we also drilled a little bit better wells in 2015. So when we look at dollars per unit, both in F&D and in dollars per flowing barrel, we see improvements there. And that's partly because, you know, the wells that we drilled in 2015 were better than the ones we drilled in 2014. How do we translate that into 2016? You know, I think we can expect to retain at the current levels of industry activity that we're seeing all of the efficiency gains that we had in 2015 and maybe even improve upon those a little bit. And even with the service costs, I think we're fully expecting to realize all of the savings that we had in 2015 and hopefully maybe even lower those service costs a little more, get even lower service costs in 2016 to enjoy. Whether we get similar improvement in the productivity and the quality of the wells that we drill will remain to be seen. We still have to obviously go out and drill those wells, but I think Dave and the team are quite confident that the inventory that we have to pursue in 2016 looks just as good as the stuff we were pursuing in 2015.
Thank you. Rico, every year in our reserves report news release, we identify how many of our wells moved reserves from the proved and probable categories of our reserves to the proved producing group. But that also leaves the question about the other wells. Can you give us some color on the new reserves uncovered in our drilling activities in 2015?
Thanks, Jim. Hello, everyone. The new reserves uncovered by the other wells that are not in Peyto's inventory are from a combination of mostly development and exploratory drilling. The other development wells are on lands that offset productive wells, but because the lands are not owned by Peyto when the 2014 year-end reserves were prepared, they could not be included in the inventory. For example, lands acquired through land sales or through land swaps in 2015 are often highly prospective development lands that yield drillable locations that can be harvested immediately, which is exactly what Peyto did in some cases. Farm-ins on existing lands also fall into this category, and Peyto did some of that as well. As for species of wells, Spirit River zones such as the Nautikiwin, the Fullers, and Woolrich make up these new reserves. In addition, Peyto drilled several exploratory wells on existing lands in the Greater Sundance area, Ansel, North Kakwa, Minehead, and Brazeau. Most of these exploratory wells were drilled on lands that are on trend with productive horizons but are too distant to be categorized as proven or probable. The Middle Fullere and Nautikiwin in North Ansel, the Upper Fullere in South Ansel, the Woolrich and the Blue Sky in Minehead, and the Lower Fullere in Sundance are some of the horizons that were proven productive by exploratory wells. At Brazeau, Peyto drilled its first successful Nautikiwin well, which is also an exploratory well. And in North Kakwa, a Middle Fullere test, which is on trend with a prolific Middle Fullere channel several miles to the north, was successful and productive as well. So in summary, the other wells contributed approximately 18 million BOEs of P plus P reserves before any production is subtracted, or roughly 515,000 BOEs per net well.
Thank you. Rico, another perennial question is how our horizontal wells have been performing against previous years' evaluations. Our oldest horizontal wells are now more than 5 years old, and knowing how our horizontal wells have progressed against the original and subsequent modeling should give us a better feel for their predictability and the confidence level in our projections. So how are they stacking up as they age, and how much better are our models because of our increasing experience with them?
Well, Jim, I'm pleased to report once again that Peyto's first three horizontal wells from 6 years ago continue to perform as predicted. There have been no material changes to their assessments in the past 3 years. In fact, those wells drilled prior to 2012 as a group have remained essentially unchanged. Because we now have nearly 600 producing horizontal wells from which we can create production type curves for various types of species, the art of forecasting the performance of Peyto's current and future wells is becoming more predictable, and we are confident that our production models are much improved and more reliable today.
Thank you. JP, in the detailed analysis of our news release, we identified that 103 of our 2015 drills were formerly on our books as undeveloped locations. Can you comment on and explain the cost and reserve outcome of these wells as compared to what was on our books in the past when those locations were represented as undeveloped locations?
Sure, Jim. I direct our listeners to the table we included in our press release under the value creation subsection of the analysis. First of all, I think it's important to point out that this is the fifth year in a row where we converted over 70% of our drilling activity from what was undrilled locations on our books to actual producing reserves. That gives confidence to those looking at our reserves report that the future locations we represent on our books are credible, viable locations that we intend to drill. Further, the fact that over the past 5 years, we have also continually drilled and completed those wells at a cost per unit lower than what was modeled in the report. This past year was especially cheap due to the low activity levels and resulting lower service costs, which many of our peers enjoyed too. However, I doubt there are many operators that have a similar track record of repeated outperformance of their reserve book year over year in this regard. Now, besides the lower service costs, we've seen significant increases in efficiency, like quicker drill times, and we've made step changes to reduce costs on completions without impacting well productivity. The cost performance, of course, is only one part of the equation, the numerator, if you like. The other important part is the reserves that are assigned to each well, the denominator. Once again, over the last 5 years, we've met or beat the undrilled reserve assignments when those wells have been converted to producing reserves. This past year, we've had better production performance in the Brazeau area than we carried on our books, specifically in the Wilrich Formation. So the key takeaway here is that our past performance in this regard should provide some assurance to the undeveloped reserves and costs currently modeled in our reserve report.
Darren, given the challenging price environment offset by the greatly increased capital efficiency of adding production and reserves, how do you see our countercyclical strategy evolving in 2016?
Well, I think it's working well. We're not completely immune to natural gas prices and the prices that we're currently looking at the strip. You know, we've got summer gas prices in that sort of $1.50 to $1.60 range, which are very low. So we do have to be a little bit cognizant of how that short-term low gas price impacts our economics. I mean, ideally, we'd like to be able to drill and complete all our wells at these low service rates and then wait and bring them on at even higher commodity prices. But, you know, we have to look at how long would we wait. And, you know, even Peyto, with the strength of its balance sheet, can't afford to finance drilling and then waiting to bring production on for years and years. So we have to be a little bit cognizant of how long would we be deferring production if we don't like the price that we're bringing it on today. I think generally speaking, though, we've done a very good job of deploying a lot of capital over the last several years in this cyclical low in natural gas prices, taking advantage of lower costs, better efficiencies in the industry. And I think, you know, when we look out into the future, when we do start to see, whenever that day comes, that natural gas prices do swing to the other side of the cycle, I think we're going to be, you know, reaping all of the rewards of investing capital today.
Thank you. Rico, We have noted previously that we had significant activity in the Brazeau area during 2015. Can you provide some idea of what areas, including Brazeau, may have the greatest impact on our reserve additions for 2015, both in aggregate and on a per well basis? Are the Brazeau wells yielding similar bookings as compared to those we see in the Greater Sundance area?
Jim, Peyto drilled in three core areas in 2015, namely the Greater Sundance Area, or GSA for short, Ansel, and Brazeau. The majority of drilling occurred in the GSA, where 99 gross wells were drilled, or 71% of the total, so it only makes sense that the greatest impact to our reserve additions for 2015 comes from this area. Brazeau and Ansel combined for 38 gross wells drilled, or roughly 27% of the total. In terms of total reserve additions for 2015, on a P plus P basis and including the addition of undeveloped locations, GSA accounts for approximately 69% of the 90 million BOEs of new reserves, or 62 million BOEs, while Ansel and Brazeau each contributed 13% and 16% respectively, or approximately 12 million BOEs and 14 million BOEs respectively. However, it's interesting to note that the GSA wells lag their counterparts at Ansel and Brazeau when it comes to average reserves per well in both the PDP wells for 2015 as well as the undeveloped locations. Specifically, the GSA PDP wells have an average reserves assignment of 575,000 BOEs on a P plus P basis, while the Ansel and Brazeau wells are at 639,000 BOEs and 607,000 BOEs respectively, also on the P plus B basis. Now, within the Brazeau area, if we were to isolate the new Brazeau Woolrich wells from the Noddy Keown and Middle Fuller wells, the average assignment of the 2015 Brazeau Woolrich wells is 671,000 BOEs, or roughly 30% higher than the 2015 GSA Woolrich average of approximately 517,000 BOEs. Furthermore, this same group of new Woolrich wells in Brazeau also has a much higher reserves assignment than the pre-2015 Brazeau Woolrich wells by approximately 29%. Now, the substantial improvement in reserves assignment is likely due to better reservoir quality that translates to a much higher initial rate of approximately 7.5 million cubic feet per day on average and a slower decline rate where the average well is still producing at greater than 3 million cubic feet per day after 9 months of production. By comparison, the pre-2015 Brazeau Woolrich wells started on average at 5 million a day and declined to slightly more than 1 million cubic feet per day after 9 months of production. With respect to the undeveloped locations, the average reserves assignment in Brazeau is 511,000 BOEs per well, which is higher than the GSA and Ansel averages of 448,000 BOEs and 485,000 BOEs per well, respectively. We anticipate that as these locations are converted to producing entities, the average assignments will increase. In summary, Peyto's 2015 drilling program was an overwhelming success, and a key contributor to this success was the Woolrich drilling program in Brazeau, which resulted in several best-in-class production performance levels, which the Peyto team aims to duplicate in 2016.
Thank you. Darren, in the past, one of the analysis you have presented has shown the capital costs for reserves and productions added in a year as measured at the end of the year compared to the amount of funds the new wells generated in the year they were added. Just how much of that $594 million of capital spending of 2015 has already been paid by the wells that we added in 2015?
Jim, you make a good point. I mean, these wells come on at high productivity, and then they have some fairly steep decline in the first year, of course. But we do capture quite a bit of the capital back in the first 12 months that these wells are on production. I think when we looked back at the end of 2015, all of the new wells we drilled in 2015 had generated just a little under $150 million of operating income. So that goes against that close to $600 million of capital that we've spent in the year that we spent it, but we've reduced it already by about 25%. And you got to remember that not all those wells came on January 1st. We were bringing wells on throughout the year as we drilled them, and in fact, we brought a lot of production on in the last 2 months of the year because that's when we managed to secure some firm service so that we weren't fighting the TransCanada interruptions anymore. We were preferentially producing the new wells a little bit through that TransCanada restricted timeline, though, shutting in the old production, because we did want to see the effect of the capital, and we did want to get those new wells on to make sure that we had invested capital wisely in those wells and that we had more of the same to continue to invest in into the future. But that's really a smart decision, because the base production and the base wells do have some afterflow in the reservoir when you shut them off short term, and so we recharge that reservoir a little bit, and then when we turn those base wells back on again, they come on stronger than before. So it makes sense to restrict those ones when we do go through a period where we don't have full access to the pipelines. But we have paid off a significant amount, to answer your question, of the capital that we spent in the year just with the production that those new wells have brought on.
Thank you. JP, from the point of view of calculating reserves, one has to consider when a well is no longer economic to produce. Can you comment in a general sense on whether the lower price outlook in the evaluation has impacted our well economic limits and therefore the associated reserves?
Okay, Jim, for clarity, reserves must be economic by definition. Clearly, with the drop in commodity prices of both gas and NGL liquids, wells can be challenged to make money and turn uneconomic if their operating costs, royalties, and other expenses exceed the revenue generated. So controlling these costs becomes very important. Because there's a portion of operating costs that are fixed, and as the production declines in the latter part of a well's life, there becomes a point where the operating costs exceed the revenue generated, even when there's an ever-increasing price forecast. That economic limit defines the limit of reserves. In Peyto's case, where we operate and produce 98% of our gas to our own facilities, we can control those costs, and we do that very well. Our exceptionally low cost structure allows most of our wells to produce economically till they just can't flow any more out of the reservoir. Even with the most recent low commodity forecasts, the revisions to our proved producing reserves due to economic factors is less than 1% of last year's opening balance. Now, another important factor when considering the economics under current price forecasts is the effect they have on undeveloped reserves. Again, Peyto's low operating costs, combined with our demonstrated frugal capital well costs, allows us to continue to drill economic wells. We've experienced a modest 1-2% reduction of our total proved or 2P reserves as compared with last year due to these economic factors. Compare that with our peers who have released this info to date, where they're up to 5% reductions that they've seen in their total proved reserves due to economics.
Thanks, JP. Rico, while we state that we have added 1.7 new booked locations per booked location that we drilled in 2015, can you add some color to the booked locations added, and can you speak to the state of our unbooked but potential drilling locations?
Sure, Jim. We've already mentioned that 74% or 103 out of 140 wells drilled were in Peyto's inventory last year. Of the 103 wells, 70 were proven undeveloped or PUs, and 33 were probable additional or PAs. We're pleased to report that the 70 PU locations drilled were replaced by 79 new PUs, which is an increase of 9 gross locations, and the 33 PA locations drilled were replaced by 92 new PAs, which is an increase of 59 gross locations, for a total of 171 new locations added, or a net increase of 68 gross locations. Therefore, the total horizontal well count increased to 815 from 747 last year, which is an increase of 9%. The total count by formation increased for every horizon that was targeted in 2015. More specifically, the NauticUN now has 140 locations, up from 118 last year. The Falaise, that's the upper in the middle, are at 160 locations, up from 131 last year. The Woolridge sits at 262 locations, up from 256 last year, and the Blue Sky is at 52 locations, up from 45 last year. New horizons in the Viking and Basal Foliar were added to the inventory as well at 2 locations each. The Cardium, Dunvegan, and Cadamin, by virtue of not having drilled new wells on these horizons last year, remain unchanged. It is important to note that the 815 horizontal well locations in our books are what our evaluators would recognize as proven and probable only. Peyto's well inventory far exceeds that count. In fact, the number of unbooked locations has increased modestly from a year ago despite the addition of 171 new locations to Peyto's inventory. As of this moment, there are approximately 1,267 additional drilling locations that are currently unbooked, or roughly 9 more years at an average of 140 wells per year of drilling that could be added to the 5-year development plan that is already in place in our reserves report.
Great, thanks.
Darren, because of the large drop in the capital cost to drill and complete wells this year, the future development capital forecasts in the reserve report have been revised downward substantially despite there being more well locations to drill and in the future than before. This downward revision skews the comparison of FD&A costs and recycle ratios for total proved and proved plus probable reserves, where that FD&A costs include adjustments to the future development capital. Can you suggest how investors should compare the undeveloped reserves of Peyto to other companies or even to previous years?
Yeah, Jim, we've seen that phenomenon pretty dramatically this year, and we've seen it across the industry a lot with people lowering their future development capital and that having a pretty material impact on their FD&A costs for the undeveloped components. You know, I've always suggested that investors should first focus on the cost to develop reserves into production as their primary focus, and that's the most accurate way to really gauge how efficiently companies are developing that undeveloped resource base. So we tend to highlight and point investors to that PDP, or proved developed producing FD&A number, as the most important FD&A metric to compare, because that's the one that's been done. The dollars have been spent, the reserves have been developed, and you know what you got. You don't have to forecast out into the future what capital costs are going to be for wells, maybe many years out into the future. You don't have to forecast when those wells are going to get drilled. Of course, all of it has been done if we're looking at PDP. So, you know, the first number that investors need to really look at, I think, is the PDP number. And, you know, there is a cautionary flag to be raised, I think, with respect to this future development capital. The danger, of course, is that these large changes in future development costs that companies are now showing may manifest themselves in the future as higher cost than what they're currently forecasting. And so, you know, really the reason we're getting these lower costs is because there's lower activity levels, because we got lower commodity prices. But if companies don't invest over the next few years, if they decide to defer that capital investment for several years out until commodity prices recover, well, then those costs are going to be higher. They're not going to get those wells drilled for what they're forecasting today. They're going to cost quite a bit more. And so that's going to result in the FD&A numbers swinging back the other way quite aggressively. For all of the savings that they're apparently quoting today, you could see the FD&As swinging back the other way quite aggressively. So, you know, I think, again, I point investors really to the PDP FD&A number. That's the real truthful number. And ultimately, that's the number that companies have really been developing resources for. I would suspect that that number is going to be the primary driver in their true replacement costs going forward.
Thank you. JP, the 2015 year overall has been a tremendous year for Peyto from many perspectives. Production rate growth, reserve growth, capital cost reductions. Did we have any negative learnings that will also impact how and where we invest future dollars?
You know, look backs and analysis of our results for ways to learn from our mistakes or improve on our successes are part of the culture at Peyto. This past year, we had a lot more sidetracks than we're accustomed to. In some instances, these were unavoidable operational problems, but in other cases, it was geologically related. It highlights the need to have bailout zones if the sand that we're primarily targeting is not present or poor quality than we expected. Now, we did this half a dozen times last year, and it speaks to the importance of pre-planning and the fact that we enjoy a stack of formations in this area of the deep basin where we drill. Fortunately, we can afford to do this and still come in with costs that make our wells economic. Sometimes in our efforts to extend a deeper target play, the well provides us with data validating up hole targets, and in the process proves up more future drilling locations. So we'll continue to balance our risk in this regard as we invest future dollars.
Thanks. Darren, do you have any other comments on the outlook for 2016 at Peyto?
Well, Jim, right now, obviously, with commodity prices where they are, it's looking like it's going to be a very challenging year for the industry. And, you know, even at Peyto, where we've driven our FD&A costs and our cash costs down to a record low level. You know, we're under 250 in MCFE really to build new production and to produce it out of the ground and sell it. But you know, we're looking at gas prices right now that are in that $1.50 to $2 range. So even our economics are getting pressured a little bit in the short term. I think we're going to see a fairly significant activity response by the industry. There's not a lot of cash flow out there to fund development work, and not a lot of economics are making the grade at these levels. And really, gas producers specifically, while they may not like the gas price, they really don't have a lot of options anymore to run to liquids-rich gas because the oil price is down too, and the natural gas liquids prices are down. So I think the supply response we get from the industry this year is going to be much more dramatic than we've seen in past years, like, say, 2012, when we had a low gas price, but we had a high oil price at that time. This time around, we don't have that. And so I think we're going to see a much more dramatic supply response from the industry. And that could effectively correct any oversupply or storage glut that we have on the gas side quite quickly. It's going to be a challenging year, but we want to be as aggressive as we can be, of course. As the lowest cost producer in the industry, we have the most cash flow to deploy. And we also want to take advantage of strength of our balance sheet as well to, you know, try and crystallize as much of this low cost savings as we can, to drill as many sort of $3.5 million wells as we can that used to cost us $4.7 million a year ago. We want to take advantage of that going forward this year. But we too have to protect our balance sheet a little bit, make sure it stays as strong as it always has been at Peyto. We don't want to take too much risk on there, but still I think we'll be taking advantage of this cost structure much more aggressively than most in the industry. I wouldn't be surprised if in 2016, this time next year, we're looking back at 2016 saying, wow, we just posted another record year in terms of F&D costs, another record year in terms of cash costs, and maintained a lot of the same profitability that we're looking for with even lower commodity prices.
Thanks, Darren. Thanks, JP and Rico. And this is the end of our Reserves Report podcast, and we'll be coming back to you real soon with the results for 2015 fourth quarter and year end.